All right, so we got a fun destination for you today, don't we, Kelly?
We do, we do. There's so many fun and interesting facts about this town.
Oh, my gosh. It's the town is known for its yellow grass, and it is the helium capital of the world.
Yes, and it is also home to the world-famous 72-ounce steak challenge. Where are we heading, babe?
We are heading to Amarillo, Texas. Stay tuned to listen to everything you want to know about Amarillo.
Here we go.
Did you know that 46 million Americans plan to take an RV trip in the next 12 months? 90% of recreational vehicle owners take three or more mini vacations every year. Welcome to the RV Destinations Podcast. If it's RV travel, we're talking about it. From campgrounds to museums to national and state parks, kayaking and hiking opportunities. One of the most fun and pleasurable things you can do is just hit the road. So be ready to be inspired. Welcome in to the RV Destinations Podcast. Now your host, President Randy Beheimer, and Editor-in-Chief, Callie Beheimer.
Hello and welcome to the RV Destinations Podcast. This is the podcast series where we talk about everything destination related, where you want to take your RV, why you want to go there, and why you want to take your family there. I am Randy Beheimer, president of RV Destinations Magazine. I'm here with my wonderful and loving wife, Callie Beheimer, who happens to be the editor-in-chief. Say hello to everybody.
Hello, everybody.
And today we are talking about this cool little city that a lot of people just pass through and don't take the time to stop and say hello and really explore the area.
Yeah, it's definitely a pass-through town, and we're guilty of that. We have passed through this town numerous times for usually just one night over as we're heading out west or heading back east. But we spent some time here, and we're so glad that we did.
It's just so darn convenient because we live in Kentucky. A lot of times, I remember last time we went out to Sedona in Amarillo, Texas, is, of course, the place we're talking about. And that's kind of
We kind of need to tell them that, right? Yeah. Hey, we're going to Amarillo.
Yeah. So, but anyway, it's about halfway, almost exactly, from Sedona to Kentucky. And so it just really offers a real nice, quick pull off, spend the night, maybe unwind for an extra day, and then head home. So, and we're going to talk about a cool campground that's right there off the freeway that we usually stay at. They're not sponsoring the show, but we're going to talk about them.
Yes.
And a bunch of other things. But in typical format, let's talk about some fun facts about Amarillo.
Amarillo, Texas.
I've got a few of these. Hopefully, Callie, you didn't pull anything up.
I did not pull up any fun facts because I'm kind of relying heavily on you for that information.
That is my job.
It is your job.
Don't take my job away from me.
I shall not.
All right. So anyway, let me back up for a minute before we get into the fun facts. So we went to Amarillo, and I got to be honest, I like Amarillo, but I wasn't completely thrilled with writing a featured destination in the magazine about it, because I really didn't feel like there was enough to do there when I, you know, and that was kind of very blind to me, because I didn't know exactly what to do there, and I was pleasantly surprised when we got there, how much stuff there really is to do. You've got to look, and that's what this podcast is all about. We're going to tell you about the things that there is to do, but anyway, let's get to the fun facts. So,
fun facts.
So Amarillo, Texas was originally known as Oneida, but it was renamed after the yellow grass that grows in the area, and that grass is known as Amarillo.
Oh, interesting.
So they renamed it. Yeah, so that's interesting. So the yellow grass that's found pretty much everywhere in Amarillo, they renamed it because of the grass.
Very cool.
Here's a fact that I did not know. Amarillo is known as the helium capital of the world.
What?
Yeah, apparently within a 250-mile radius of Amarillo is the majority of the world's helium supply.
So where does one get helium outside of a tank? Because it's a naturally occurring element, isn't it?
You're asking the wrong
person. Isn't it on the periodic table of elements? Helium, H-E? I think.
If there's any, what would that be, chemist? I don't know what that would be. Please.
High school science teachers, help us out here.
I don't think naturally comes in a bottle.
I'm picturing like driving out across a road in Amarillo and there's like these helium tanks everywhere with helium balloons, but I know that that's not it, but that's just kind of what pops in my head.
Yeah, so I mean, this makes Amarillo the key player in global helium markets.
Wow.
And so they kind of control the whole world's helium supply.
That is so interesting.
Yeah, no, I didn't know that.
Okay, that just leads to so many more questions.
Yeah, lots of questions.
Lots of questions.
A couple more that I thought was interesting.
I'm ready.
Of course, and we've talked about this one before. This was actually episode 3. It's home to the Grand Canyon of Texas, which is Palo Duro Canyon. I'm not going to go into that much because we've talked about that in great detail. That's in the magazine. That's actually episode 3 as well. But Amarillo, Texas is the cattle capital of the world.
I believe that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Amarillo, Texas is renowned for its longstanding record as America's cattle shipping capital.
Mm-hmm.
This is largely due to the abundance of large cattle ranches in the area, which span across the center of the state. Some of the largest cattle ranches in the country, spanning over hundreds and thousands of acres. So,
yep, and we've seen some of those, and you can see some of them from the interstate, and you can smell them before you get to them. They're the cattle yards are huge.
That's right. Huge. So two more, and
okay.
And by the way, I'm pulling all these facts. I pretty much Googled it, and this is off of 10factsabout.com. They are not sponsoring the show. This is a website I visit quite often to look at some of the different fun facts you didn't know about the city that we're talking about. And so it never stops surprising me. Of these cities we go into, I'm like, I didn't know helium was that big of it.
Helium capital of the world?
Yeah, so apparently there's nuclear weapon assembly plants in Amarillo, so that's that happens there as well.
Well, they did used to have a very large Air Force base there, and they did used to build planes for, I believe it was World War II.
Yeah, so apparently, that's right. We're going to talk about that probably, too. So there's a facility that covers over 1,000 acres, and it's responsible for the assembly, maintenance, and storage of nuclear weapons for the U.S. military.
Hmm.
It's one of the most secure sites in the country with multiple layers of security and surveillance to ensure the safety of the weapons and personnel.
See, it's so secure, we didn't even know it existed.
Yeah, I had no idea.
And when we were there, we never passed anything that was like, huh, that looks like a nuclear development plant.
Right.
Yeah.
So the last thing we'll jump in. So the city of Amarillo, Texas has been a popular filming location for many iconic movies. In some of them, we actually talked about the one in Palo Duro Canyon, which makes number one. That's Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Da, da, da,
the
da,
da, apparently the last scene where
da, da,
Indiana
da, da,
Jones and his
da, 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 da.
Is that the right?
Yeah.
That sounds like Superman, isn't it?
Oh my gosh, maybe it was.
I don't know. Someone's going to call you out on
somebody
that. That's terrible.
Is. I'm so sorry.
But anyway, so Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, which we talked about in the Palo Duro Canyon, was shot at the rim of Palo Duro Canyon. When they rode off into the sunset. But also, there was a couple more. Thelma and Louise, parts of that was filmed there. No Country for Old Men in the Alamo.
Oh, very interesting.
So that very really wraps up. I mean, there's some other things here, but I think that pretty much keeps... We got to mention this because I'm assuming this is one of our top 10s.
I'm going to have to hurry up and add it on. Awkward.
So this is world known, but Amarillo is known for the 72-ounce steak challenge.
Oh, yes.
Which is Amarillo's best-kept secret, according to 10factsabout.com.
And we do talk about that.
Okay, I'm like, you had to put that on
there. Oh, I totally put that on
there. We got pictures to prove it.
We do have pictures. Oh, it's going to be so fun. Just wait till we get to that one.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun.
All right, so we ready to dive in?
We are. And we are going to start at number 10, and I do have an honorable mention. It did not make it to the list because it actually wasn't open. It opened up a few days after we left, so we didn't get to see it, but that is Bill's Backyard Classics. This place is super, super cool. It is a private collection of classic cars that is open to the public. They have 88 classic cars and have all been like gorgeously, beautifully, painstakingly restored. So I wanted to throw that out there. Bill's Backyard Classics. It's a very popular destination in Amarillo. We weren't able to make it because it had not opened yet for the season, but I wish we could have seen it because I am into classic cars. So I really would have enjoyed that. But we're going to hop into number 10, and that is the Amarillo Zoo and close to it, the Wonderland Amusement Park. So they're in the same area there in Amarillo. It is a big kind of public park area that was built up early in like the 1940s, 1950s. And I'll talk about Wonderland first. So Wonderland actually opened in 1951, and at that time it was called Kiddyland, and it had three rides. And it was really cute because one of the rides, I believe, was built by the owner of the park, who was Paul Rhodes. He and his wife opened up this little Kiddyland. He had, you know, worked in this Kiddyland part-time and had another job full-time, and then finally decided that was it. He was going to throw his heart and soul into Kiddyland. So in 1969, he added some more rides. They changed the name to Wonderland. And in fact, he even built one of the rides, and Randy and I rode it, and it was the Fantastic Journey. So he actually built that ride by hand. And what is so cool about this park is that these are like, you, it's like so nostalgic. I see you over here just grinning at me. So
it's like a 1970 amusement park is what
I mean,
when we talk about this, don't think Disney,
like,
World, don't think
Six Flags or Kings Island
in Cincinnati.
Cedar
Point, yeah. Right. Think
It's kind of frozen in time. So in 1969
yes.
is what
it's still frozen
like,
in time.
It's frozen in time. And it's, I mean, we rode one ride that I'm on this ride and I'm like, wow, I feel like there's so many like safety violations here. You like whip around a corner. I'm like, if you stick your arm out, your arm is gone.
Right, so now we're terrifying our listeners and telling them they should do this. So what had me was we did this roller coaster.
Oh my gosh, this is so cool.
And we did this roller coaster and it was actually a fun roller coaster.
It was
very
fun.
Short, but at the end we got out. In the crew of like three guys and maybe one girl came and got the cart and pushed it up to the start. because it's all gravity fed. There's no electric.
Yeah, it's completely manual. So they had the chain was the only thing that got you up the first hill. That was a motor that they literally started for each ride. So it wasn't like continually running. They started the motor. It chugged you up the hill. They got to the top. They shut off the motor. And then the rest of it was gravity fed. We got to the end and this skinny little teenage boy literally had to put on the brakes manually to stop us.
Oh, and he was pulling so hard to get that brake to stop.
And it was incredible.
Probably because of me.
Probably because of you. But at the same time, this is what amusement parks were all about back in the day. You know, long before we got so inundated with the most epic, crazy 15 loop-de-loop, upside down, flying by the seat of your pants.
Overstimulation.
Overstimulation. This is like one of America's true original amusement parks.
Yeah, so it's really nice to take the kids there.
Yes,
you know,
lots of kid rides.
If you have adult children, you might want to skip it.
Yeah.
Honestly, because I think adult kids that are used to
like
Disney
15,
World,
16-year-olds, yeah, they might be a little.
I'm saying adult kids, aren't I? Yeah. I don't mean adult kids, older kids.
Older kids, like older teenagers. Younger kids would love it.
If they've been spoiled with Disney Worlds and the Six Flags, all that, they're probably not going to enjoy this because these are, as we've said, primitive rides. They did have a nice train that circled the park, and they had one of those ski lifts.
Trams? I don't know. You just get in the cute little swinging cart and you go throughout the park. They had a Ferris wheel. They had a carousel.
They had
the train. They had a log flume ride. They even had one of those little canyon river rides, you know, in the raft where you always get soaking wet because the water comes out of nowhere. They had some roller coasters that apparently are pretty iconic. I think it was the Texas Tornado, but it was not operating. We were literally there the day that they opened for the season. So some of the rides were not working yet because they were still getting them up and running for the season. But it was still just a really neat experience. Can you spend a whole day there? No.
I think you could with little kids.
I
think most of the day anyway. So, I think little kids would enjoy it. But but let's move on and talk about the Emerald Zoo. Because I had very low expectations for the zoo. And I was actually kind of impressed because we read somewhere they only had like 75 species or 85 or something.
So they
like
actually
that.
Have 120 animals representing 70 species.
Okay, maybe that's what I remember. Yeah. 70. So we live near Cincinnati Zoo, and Cincinnati has an amazing zoo.
It's one of the top zoos in the nation.
Well, of course, San Diego's really good. There's a lot of great zoos out there.
Yeah, and I grew up in Columbus, Ohio, you know, with Jack Hanna. Jack Hanna, right? Yeah, Jack Hanna with the Columbus Zoo. And Columbus Zoo is just massively huge and incredible.
Yeah, so we went into this not expecting much, especially when I saw 70 species. I mean, you can get 70 different like snakes.
Right.
So we didn't know what to expect. But they had lions, and they had tigers. They had a black panther.
I don't think they had a tiger. They had the black panther. So they had the lion. They had
the male lion, I guess.
And then the two females.
Right.
And then very close to it, in the next kind of cage, was the black panther. And the male lion and the black panther were like,
eyeing each other up. Yeah, they're both
like,
males.
Locking eyes each other like, what's up? What's up?
Right.
I don't know. What are you doing? I mean, but what's cool is because this is the Amarillo Zoo opened back in 1955. And what's cool is a lot of these exhibits allow you to get a lot closer to these animals than some of the newer zoos and the newer exhibits, you know, that keep you so far away, it's kind of hard to see everything. So like we got to see this black panther and this lion, like
pretty close.
They were right there. Yeah, it was incredible.
Yeah, the black panther was definitely the coolest thing there. I don't know if I've ever seen a black panther, but
me either.
Yeah, I think it was a boy or a girl? I don't know.
It was
know
a boy
that.
Because okay. yeah, That's it was right. the boy black panther and the boy lion, and they were like, "What's up?"
Yeah, so they're in two separate enclosures, and they're staring at each other, and you could see that they did not like
each
other.
They did not like being that close.
They were, but the black panther, he was so beautiful.
Beautiful.
I mean, the coat was just black and shiny, mm-hmm. and just. What a beautiful thing. But, there was a camel and a few other things. And then there was the ones you would expect out of a small zoo, like pigs.
Yeah, pigs.
And cattle.
Cattle. Yeah, they did. I mean, it's Texas, so they had Texas longhorns.
Yep.
And
yep.
those were there. And we were actually there over Easter weekend, and it was really neat. They had different events going on there in the zoo where they had all these different booths set up from all these different vendors in the community. And it was almost like trick-or-treating for Easter. So kids could go to these different booths and pick up candy. And, you know, they had Easter egg hunts going on. So it was just really neat. You could tell that this was a big kind of community feel of locals coming in and really getting to enjoy the zoo.
Yeah. So my recommendation would be if you don't have kids, skip the zoo.
Yeah.
If you're an adult and you're spoiled like we are, just skip the zoo. Yeah. There's no reason to go there. But if you got kids, you have a good time. Now, the one beautiful thing is I think the zoo was $4.
Yeah, it was. It's normally like $4 or $4.50 to get in. I mean, it is really, really cheap to get in. I think we paid $6 per person because it was a quote, a special event. But, you know, again, most zoos, you're walking in paying $30, $35
right.
to get into a zoo. So, you know, this is definitely someplace that you could take the kids. Or even if you just want kind of a more quaint, kind of quiet zoo experience, you know, you could spend an evening or an afternoon for a couple of hours for a few bucks and go see some cool animals up close.
Yeah, so I think we should also write here another honorable mention is the Amarillo Botanical Garden.
Yes.
We went there and nothing was really in season. It's too early in the season when we were there. But they did have a greenhouse, right? That would be called a greenhouse, right?
Yeah, I guess a conservatory.
Conservatory.
Yeah.
And that was pretty cool. It was kind of small, but again, it was $7 to get in, I think.
It wasn't expensive to get in. I think in the summertime, spring and summer and probably fall, the outdoor gardens would be absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
They had
Japanese garden.
They had a Japanese garden, and they had, remember that like mosaic tile wall that they had was kind of part of a Sonoran desert part of the botanical garden. So just some neat stuff to look at. The conservatory was pretty cool. They had some ducks on the inside, and that I thought those little ducks were nifty and neato.
Yeah, so we didn't make the top 10 because, again, a lot of the plants outside they were still planting them. There was nothing in bloom.
They were literally like mulching and planting as we were walking through.
so it didn't make it, but if you're there in the spring, the summer, definitely go check it out because I think it could be cool.
Yeah, I do too. I think it would be very, very pretty to see.
So there you go. If you got kids, go to the Amarillo Zoo or the Wonderland Amusement Park.
They're next to each other.
If you've got a black thumb or a green thumb or whatever they say, go to the Amarillo Botanical Garden. Just make sure it's not in the winter, beginning spring.
Yes.
So moving on to number nine. This is so fun.
Oh, this is so neat.
So
there's a really cool story behind this. So go ahead, mention it or talk about it. Woohoo!
Okay, so number 10 is go by, and everybody knows this about Amarillo, but go by and see Cadillac Ranch and VW. Now, some people, many people don't know about the VW Bug Ranch as well, but let's talk about that. So do you want to tell them about a little bit about Cadillac Ranch?
Yeah, so the Cadillac Ranch, I looked this up because Cadillac Ranch, now this is on Route 66. So Interstate 40 is Route 66. So you're driving across Amarillo on Interstate 40. You look off, if you're heading west, you look off to your left. So you're going to look south and you would see these very colorful half Cadillacs sticking diagonally up out of a field. And that is the Cadillac Ranch. And what's so interesting about this, this was actually the brainchild of a group of hippies from San Francisco who were really big into art. They referred to themselves as the Ant Farm. I have no idea where that name came from. So this group of hippies from San Francisco had a silent funder, a local Amarillian who was a billionaire, Stanley Marsh III. And Stanley wanted this really radical piece of art that got people in Amarillo to kind of stop. And that was his whole purpose. So Stanley and the Ant Farm got together and said, what can we do? So the Ant Farm literally drove 10 Cadillacs into one of Stanley Marsh's fields, buried them nose down, facing west in a line, and it was all as a tribute to the changing rear end of the Cadillac. And that was the whole purpose of this. And so the Cadillacs range from a 1949 Club Sedan all the way up to a 1963 Cadillac Sedan DeVille. And there they are. And so what had happened is it was out in this field, and over time people would visit it and they started taking pieces and parts off these Cadillacs because when they were originally there, they were fully functioning and drivable. And Stanley and the Ant Farm, this group of hippies, were totally fine with that. And so people came and basically stripped these Cadillacs completely down, spray painted them, graffitied them, and they're still like that today.
But it's so cool. I mean, it really is.
Yes.
And also, so I wrote the article on Cadillac Ranch many years ago, back before we had 20 writers.
And right.
You and I
we were writing.
And you got to understand, I'm not a writer. I'm a photographer. I will stand next to any photographer out there as far as taking pictures, but I'm a terrible writer. And back then, we didn't have many writers. And so I wrote this article. But I do know, or I think I recall, that they actually moved Cadillac Ranch. It used to be somewhere else, and they moved it to this location.
Really?
Yeah. We would have to do some research, but I'm pretty sure that's true.
Okay, because I thought it was like this one, because...
No. It's the same one. They just had to move locations because of some reason. I can't remember what the reason was. I'd have to go back and read my article from 3 years ago. But they did move. I do remember that. And it's just such a cool experience.
It is. And they encourage you today. It is literally like a living, breathing piece of artwork. And they encourage you to bring spray paint with you and spray paint your mark on one of these Cadillacs. And then different artists will actually come out, and because there's so much spray paint on these Cadillacs now, it comes off in big chunks and pieces. And so different artists in the community will come out, get chunks and pieces of this paint that has chipped off and fallen off, and then they turn that into art. So there's different places throughout Amarillo that you can get like necklaces or earrings or paintings or whatever it may be of chipped off paint from these Cadillacs at the Cadillac Ranch, which I think is totally cool. They continue just to repurpose this art, which is neat.
Yeah, and another cool thing is it sits right on Route 66.
So
you can say I get to see some cool things on Route 66.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying, and then because you've got the Cadillac Ranch and it is so well known and so popular, what a lot of people don't know is 30 minutes heading east of Cadillac Ranch, right off of I-40, is the VW Slugbug Ranch. And there's, you know, I've kind of dug around. No one really knows quite the origins of it, other than they think it was kind of like a...
It's a pun. It was a
like
pun
a
to
pun.
Cadillac
right,
Ranch,
a,
yeah.
A pun, a little nod, a little pun to the ranch. But there's five VW Bugs that are buried nose first and they are completely shelled out. And they're spray painted as well. And there's also another older car there. There's an old Route 66 gas station. Yep. And then there was like a service center there too. Because I remember there were like bleacher seats sitting right out front.
Don't remember that.
Yeah, I think that was it. Yeah, it was. There were like little bleacher seats sitting right out front of this old kind of like service
center. And this sits right off of the get-off ramp of the freeway, right on, what is that, Interstate 40?
It's Interstate 40, and it's in Conway, Texas.
Yeah, so it's a little bit east of Amarillo. Mm-hmm, but
30 minutes.
You know what's really cool about this, and again, this is a photographer speaking, so the gas station was really cool. There's a lot of things you can kind of walk around and take if you really enjoy that kind of older graffiti type style, urban photography.
Definitely. Because what's cool, you know, the photographer and me, you know, I love taking that type of art because you can really get in and, you know, change the colors and the settings, you know, when you're editing the pictures, make it more grungy or turn it black and white or, you know, so there's just a lot of fun things you can do with that type of photography.
Yeah. And so if you're in your RV and you're leaving town, and you're heading east, you can pull off of the exit.
Yeah.
Park on the exit. Walk over to it. You don't even have to unhook your car if you're in a motorhome, pulling a tow, or vice versa if you're in a fifth wheel, or excuse me, you're in a diesel truck. I can't even speak.
It's okay. It's because you're
in a truck pulling a fifth wheel or bumper pull or whatever. You can just pull off the emergency exit, and it's right there, right off the exit.
It's right there. So definitely a cool thing to see, sure.
So moving on. Number eight. I know these guys were so cute.
Oh, my gosh.
So visit the Texas Air and Space Museum. This is another one that again, don't think of Cape Canaveral, Florida.
No. This is Amarillo, Texas. And it is, so it's ran by volunteers. And the guy that, you know, kind of helped us out, oh my gosh, what a sense of humor this guy had. He was awesome. I was laughing so hard. But the Texas Air and Space Museum, what they say they were, why they created it, is they said they were built to honor servicemen and women, aviators and astronauts of Northwest Texas. And right now they're located in an airplane hangar. They were gifted some land with like five huge grain warehouses. And so right now they're trying to raise the money to move their museum over to these grain warehouses and kind of renovate that area and continue to expand because it's really interesting because they've had some pieces donated to them that are very, very significant. They have a 1945 Douglas DC-3 N-34. This one specifically is listed on the National Register of Historic Places. What is so cool about that is there are only three moving things in the United States that are listed on the National Register of Historic Places. And this DC-3 at this museum is one of them. And the other two are the San Francisco cable cars and the New Orleans streetcars.
Really? Yeah. I didn't know that.
Isn't that incredible? Cool. Yeah. So I thought that was really cool. And this 1945 Douglas DC-3 has been fully restored. It actually flew. So they had it flying up in the air back in 2003. And they did that with the Cross Country Centennial Tour, which commemorated the Wright brothers' first flight. So here's this 1945 plane that is now sitting in this airplane hangar that you can tour that was up in the air just, you know, back in 2003. And it's on the National Register of Historic Places.
That is very cool. Yeah, so these two gentlemen that were in the front, and then as we left, there was a lady that came to the front desk. But but anyway, they were such good guys. You could tell that they've been flying their whole entire life.
Oh, they were so passionate.
They were older gentlemen. They were a little slow moving around. But you're right. They were very passionate about that. They believed in it. And really, it's as she said, it was a complete, as Callie said, it was a complete volunteer group. Mm-hmm. And I think they had a lot of great things to look at, especially if you're a pilot of any type. I think you would really, really enjoy this. If you're not a pilot, you know, but you have an open mind, I think it's definitely worth going to see. But what I said, and this is going to sound negative, I don't mean it to be, but it looks like a bunch of guys kind of put this together rather than
yeah.
they need a good woman
they
to go
do,
in there.
And that's what I said. They really need a good woman to go in and organize all of this.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the stuff was literally like printed on paper, put into a binder, and you would like flip through and read information or look at articles or pictures. And so if they just had a good woman to come in there and kind of organize
I just felt like it didn't flow very well. Yeah. There was like a World War II like plane, and the next thing you have, you've got an astronaut the shuttle, their tires there was
yeah,
right
oh
next
yeah.
to it.
They so. Had a space shuttle tire, which was really cool to see. So, I mean, there was a lot of really neat things to see there. They take you outside. There are some planes outside
military
as well,
aircraft,
military
yeah.
aircraft, one of which flew in Vietnam, which is, you know, significant for me. My dad was in Vietnam for quite a few years. So it was neat to see that, you know, because that kind of ties me to my dad. And so, you know, took a picture and sent it to my dad and like, does this look familiar? And he like, oh, that's a blah, 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 blah. Yeah, those things are, you know, they could do this and they could do that. So it was just neat.
But the museum is, as you say, F-R-E-E. It's absolutely
yes,
free.
It's free. And, F-R-E-E.
But they do ask for donations.
Yes.
They don't mm-hmm. pressure you or anything like that. There's a little box as you leave to put a donation in. And again, because they are acting on complete donations,
yes.
you know, I think they're using the space the best they can
yeah.
and with the resources mm-hmm. they have. You know, they don't have billions of dollars from the government
right.
funding this. It's just a group full of volunteers trying to keep
the story alive. Because, you know, when I was talking to one of the gentlemen about my dad and my dad being in Vietnam and some of what my dad did, you know, he was like, oh my gosh, we would love to have your dad's story, you know, and that's what they're looking for. They're looking for anybody that has been in the military, is in the military, that has a story to share. You know, that you'd be happy to share with the museum. If you have any artifacts or anything that you would be willing to gift them so that they can keep your legacy going, that's really what they're all about. They're out there to, again, honor the servicemen and the servicewomen who have fought so hard for our country and for our freedom.
That's right. As we were leaving, one of the gentlemen that run the museum followed us out, and this was funny. We'll end with this story as far as the Space and Air Museum. But he said, he looked at me and he said, so, you know, I know we're new friends and all, but we've never lied to each other, right? And this just came out of the left
yeah.
field. I mean, I looked at him and I'm like, did I hear him right? What
yeah.
did he just say? And I'm like, yeah, as far as I know, we've never lied to each other. I've known you for 10 minutes now. And he's like, okay, yeah, I would never lie to you. And I just want to tell you something. I'm like, yeah. And I'm like,
yeah,
like what
like,
is this
oh
guy
going
to say
yeah.
to me? And he said, I just want you to know that your wife is much better looking than you. And I was like, you know, I get that a lot. So, but it was just the way he presented
he
it.
Did.
It was all
it
in
was
the presentation.
So funny. This guy was great.
I
oh
mean,
my gosh.
I would guess he was probably in his 70s.
Probably.
I would think. But
yeah.
again, he had a little rough time moving around, and he just looked at me. He's like, "We've never lied to each other, right?" Like, what do you say to that when
yeah.
you just met the guy
I
10 minutes ago?
10 minutes ago. I don't know. I hope we haven't lied to each other.
But anyway, they're I hate to use this word, but they're adorable. There, they really
are.
Were.
They are. You got to stop by. It's definitely worth going over and spending an hour, 2 hours, and checking the place out.
Especially if you're a pilot. If you're
yes.
a pilot, get there, see it. You know, the kids might enjoy it as well.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
You can climb up into a couple of the planes and look inside. And
oh
all
yeah,
because
what was cool is there was a younger child, probably I'm guessing around 10, and he was going through everything, and they have, you know, memorabilia from the local astronauts that have come out of and around the Amarillo area into the NASA programs. But this little boy was, you know, looking at everything, and he's like, Mom, I know what I want to be for Halloween. And she's like, already? He's like, yeah, I want to be a pilot. So it was just so cool to see that kid just so inspired by this museum.
Hey, it's Randy and Callie coming out at you. We got a very exciting announcement to let you know that starting on June 1st, we're taking orders, pre-sales,
for
our first printed edition of RV yeah. Destinations magazine.
I don't know if you heard that or not, but he just said print, like paper magazine.
Mailed to your front
door. Mailed to your door. It is coming. It's happening. We're finally doing it.
Yeah, so we finally took the plunge. We finally got exactly what we wanted. So
yes.
Cal and I had a very specific dream. We said, if we're going to launch a magazine, and it's going to be printed.
It couldn't be one of these crappy ones.
We want it to be a beautiful thing that you're going to keep for years and years and years to come.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we've achieved that. So this is going to be high resolution paper. It's going to be a little bit more content than a lot of the other magazines out there that are in print. And we're going to deliver it right to your front door.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. So if you want to make sure you get your hands on one of these subscriptions, because you're going to want this. This is a gorgeous magazine. We are starting to take pre-sales starting June 1st. So right around the corner, you're going to be able to go out to RVDestinationsMagazine.com and pre-order your print subscription.
Now, don't stress it. We're still going to be doing the digital version.
Yes,
so you can do print, you can do digital, you can do both if you want. And then we still have the annual top destinations available on our website. That comes out once a year, and that's our favorite picks of the year. You can also order that as well. That's coming out in, actually, we stopped taking orders June 15th for that. So if you're interested in that, definitely pick that up as well.
Yeah. So hang in there, folks. It's coming. Get out of your door.
Get out to www.rvdestinationsmagazine.com and hit the subscribe button.
Subscribe today.
Right. So moving on to number six. Number seven.
Seven.
I'm skipping a step. This is so cool.
This was a cool experience.
I had a lot of fun here.
Yes.
But the Amarillo Museum of Art. Now I got to put this in perspective.
Yeah.
I am not much... You know, I've got an art mind because I'm a photographer,
mm-hmm.
but I also have a business mind. I've got my MBA, as you know. And so I think I'm a kind of a nice mix between art and business.
I think you are, but I'm partial.
But lately, you know, we visit a lot of art museums, and mm-hmm. some of them just like I have no connection to.
Yeah.
Like some of the abstract art.
I can't. I've tried to get into it. I don't understand it. I'm sorry, art folks. I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah. If there's any people that can read abstract art
yeah.
or feel it or whatever, you know, I look at it, I'm like, it looks like
it's a
pages.
Black dot on a piece of paper.
Yeah, it looks like it was just thrown on the paper. But sorry. Maybe we're not civilized.
I don't know. That's it.
But anyway, so the Amarillo Museum of Art had no abstract art that I could see.
No.
And it was all so cool. I mean, it was really, really cool. They had a lot of older artifacts. So it was almost like a museum. I'm saying it is a museum.
It is museum.
But it felt more like a national history museum type thing.
Yeah, because what was really cool is what was really interesting, and we learned, and we spent a lot of time with Alex, who is the curator for the museum. So what was really neat is not only did we get to learn about the museum, but we learned about the whole curating process. Which we had never had that opportunity before. And so it really, really opened our eyes to everything that goes into getting pieces into an art to exhibit. But there's apparently, I don't want to say underground, but there's this big art, kind of like hush-hush art community in Amarillo and the surrounding area, big private collectors that have donated their pieces to the museum or have had so many pieces that they have had like exhibits running at the museum of their private collections. So like there was like a whole collection of like what Buddhas and like different kind of sandstone.
These were 500-700 year old statues.
Yeah, statues
from Japan,
like,
and China and Tibet
and India and
right. Where's the Angkor Wat?
Angkor Wat is in
Vietnam, I think. Right?
I think it is.
Not Vietnam.
Is it? Oh my gosh, you're asking. I am so geographically challenged here.
Oh my gosh, it's
like
on the tip of my tongue.
Google this. I'll talk.
Someone's in their car right now listening. But you dumbasses.
They're screaming out the answer. So, Indonesia? Oh, did I get it right? Is it Indonesia?
Cambodia.
Oh,
Cambodia.
I was so wrong.
It was right on the tip of my... I just kept hearing drum beats. Cambodia. Yeah, I just Googled it, so
okay.
I couldn't remember. But anyway, yeah, so Alex was amazing. He gave us a private tour of the art museum, and anybody that gives me a private tour, I'm sorry, because I ask so many questions, especially
he does.
I'm like, well... where do you find this art?
Yeah, how do you get it?
Yeah, how often do you change it?
Right.
You know, because I have no idea. And like Callie said, Alex did such a great job just giving us kind of an overview of, you know, how hard it really is to get collections into the museum and you know, go convince somebody, do you mind us coming and shipping all your
you know, millions and millions of dollars worth of art to our museum?
And we're only going to keep it for like 2 or 3 weeks, and we're going to set it all up, and we're going to insure it, and then we'll send it back to you on pallets and crate it up and all that.
Yeah.
And just the expense, you know, I talked to him a little bit about, you know, Cal and I have kind of an investment and insurance background. Mm-hmm. And so we're like, you know, how do you insure this?
Right, how do you insure this? And there's, and again, this is, you know, we're talking about the process because it was so fascinating to us. But again, the museum is so worthy of seeing.
Yes.
But what was so cool is there, again, there's a whole business around this. There are people whose job is to drive a vehicle that is, you know, humidity controlled, temperature controlled, has special crating, special packaging. They pick up these pieces. They ensure that it's going to be humidity controlled and temperature controlled as they ship it across the United States. And, you know, again, what's so cool is the Amarillo Museum of Art being a small museum, but they still have over 4,000 pieces. I mean, it's a significant size
that they've curated
that
themselves.
They've curated themselves. You know, but, you know, to get a piece of artwork from, let's say, New York and have it shipped across the country to them for them to exhibit. So it's just, it was really cool to learn that whole process. But, you know, the museum, so again, we talked about the 4,000 pieces of art that they have. They cover post-war to contemporary art. Four of the pieces they have are Georgia O'Keeffe pieces. So if you're familiar with Georgia O'Keeffe from the Santa Fe-ish area, you know, she was very prominent in the art world. And so they have four of her pieces. This museum is FREE, free.
Yes.
But they do appreciate donations. They also have a really cool program that every year they have an exhibit dedicated to up and coming college art students. So this has been an annual event that they've been holding since the 1970s, and it's a way for up and coming art students from the area to exhibit their work and literally have it on display for people to see in a museum, which I think is incredible.
We've got to move on.
We've
been so long-winded this time, but definitely see, this is somebody that doesn't normally go into a city, I'm talking about me, and go to art museum, but go see the Amarillo Art Museum. I think all their collection was really cool. So number six, the food scene.
Oh my gosh.
We could spend an hour on this.
We had no idea. Like, we were blown out of left field on this. And one of the places is further down on the list. We'll talk about it because y'all are going to say, but you forgot to mention. Nope. It's coming up. So I'll just say that. But there is a massive, huge food scene in Amarillo.
Yes.
Had no idea.
So Callie and I, like, when we started this trip, like, okay, we're going to start dieting. We're going to thin up for a show we're going to do in November. We've mentioned before we love to do fitness shows, mm-hmm. but sometimes the dieting is challenging, especially when you're traveling in an RV.
Amarillo.
And so we got to Amarillo, and we were like, we can't diet here.
I know.
There's so many good restaurants.
And again, we had no idea. So there's quite a few in and around historic Route 66.
Yes.
So historic route not being Interstate 40, but getting off of 40 and going the historic route. So our by far most favorite place.
Are you going to start off with that one?
I am going to start off with this one. How can I not? Braceros Mexican Grill and Bar. Oh my goodness. We're both sitting here drinking out of our Braceros super flipping cool terracotta mugs that you get when you upgrade your margarita, which I have to say that one of the best margaritas.
Oh my gosh,
had.
It was incredible.
It was amazing. It was not too sweet. It was not too sour.
Right.
It was perfect.
Just right.
It was perfect. And then if you, again, upgrade, you get this really cool take home Braceros terracotta mug. And if you bring it back, they'll refill it for only $5. I thought was amazing.
And we got six of them.
We did.
We will sell them to you for $10 right now.
I know.
No questions asked.
No questions asked. But the food. Okay, so Randy and I love Mexican food. It's like one of our favorites. We eat Mexican food constantly. This was hands down the best Mexican food we ever had in our life. We our waiter was Joel. In English, that's Joel.
J-O-E-L, Joel.
Yeah.
And he was amazing.
He was incredible, Mexican, and he said this is probably the closest to authentic Mexican food you'll get. But it was all grilled over like an open,
grill.
Oh my gosh, the food!
So we ate there twice. We never eat at the same location twice ever in any city.
No, because
ever.
We like to check things we out like so to, we can tell you.
We
guys
like
about
a variety. But we the first night I ordered a mocoyete, and it had shrimp and steak and
cactus.
Yeah, cactus. But there was something, I don't know if it was chicken or pork, something else in there, and it was so amazing. I didn't realize it was for two people.
Which
and I ordered
great,
it for myself.
So we
took it home, and it was, you know, I'm not a big steak lover. I'm sorry. I've been conditioned on chicken. I love chicken, but anyway. The steak was so good. Like two or three days later, we were trying to decide where to go to next. And we're like, you know what?
Let's go to Braceros.
Let's go back to Braceros.
And they have, what I loved about it is they have things that you don't find on a typical Mexican menu. So I had quail the second time we were there.
Yeah, I thought she was crazy for ordering that.
Oh
I really
gosh.
Did. I'm like, quail?
It was.
Does it taste like chicken?
It kind of, but not. It's slightly gamey, but not. Oh my gosh. It was outstanding. Standing, it was so good.
There you
go. Oh my gosh,
the quail at
Braceros.
But yeah. So the second night we went back, I had the the carne asada in the mocoyete was so good that I ordered it again the second night, and it was just incredible.
It was just
and then they had what ranchero beans?
Yeah, they're ranchero beans.
Was it ranchero? Or was it what's the other word?
Oh my gosh,
ranchero was the one down in Del Rio.
Yeah, dang nabbit. What's it called?
But anyway, it's the same thing as ranchero beans, but.
They call it something different.
Yeah.
I can't think of it. Anyway,
completely.
We had the beans.
Those were really, really good. But anyway, Braceros, but also there were some well-known places like the Golden Light Cafe.
Uh-huh.
That's Cafe and Cantina, excuse me. You know, that's been open since 1946. Mm-hmm. That's right there on Route 66, as we said. And then also we actually went to a barbecue place. Mm-hmm. What was it called?
It was right across the street, Smoky Joe's.
Smoky Joe's. And we thought that was... We just had an appetizer because we were... kind of in between meals, we hadn't ate, and so that was pretty good. But there's a lot of other places on Route 66, Yule Pancake Station.
The other places are not on Route 66, these were other recommendations from locals that said these are places you absolutely have to try. And they said Coyote Bluff Restaurant, which I believe is pretty close to I-40, so kind of Route 66, Pork and Things Barbecue, Ye Old Pancake Station, Dyer's Barbecue, and Zit, spelled X-I-T, Woodfire Grill.
Yep.
Those all came super, super, super highly recommended from locals.
All right. So we're over 40 minutes already.
Okay,
we apologize. We apologize that we're so far over our normal time. But number five is going to be really quick. Visit historic Route 66. There's a lot of shops. A lot of cool antique shops, restaurants, all the stuff that we talked about, you know, as far as the restaurants go, but art galleries, a lot of different things. Get to Route 66 and walk down, park your car, just walk down
it's
through the shops.
It's about a mile long. It's on 6th Avenue in between Georgia and Western Streets. So some of the restaurants that we just talked about before and number six, you can find on historic Route 66 on 6th Avenue.
Yeah, but also with Route 66, you know, there's only a short little, and I don't know if it's a mile or a half mile or what it is there in Amarillo, but we were driving west and we went out to Tucumcari.
Yeah.
And that is really kind of when you think of Route 66, you think of the old hotels, you think of the old gas stations.
Yeah, with the neon sign. And
right.
They weren't even neon, they were like the individual light bulb signs.
That's right. It's about an hour and a half to 2 hours, if I recall right.
Mm-hmm.
So if you got time or you're heading west, stop in Tucumcari. Now we've got a 41-foot motorhome, as we've said, we're pulling a Jeep. And so we pulled in there. There was plenty of different places that you can pull off and just park your...
There's an RV park in town that you could stop in and, you know, maybe pay a small fee, you know, $5-$10 to park there. You'd have to ask them. But we ended up parking behind a
Comfort
a motel.
Suite or something.
Yeah,
I don't remember what it was.
If
a hotel.
We could park back there and they're like, oh, yeah, no problem.
Yeah, so if you can make it, Tucumcari is really cool. But also right there in Amarillo, definitely see Route 66 and eat at Braceros.
Yes.
So number four is going to take a minute because we really, really enjoyed this, and that's visit the Jack Sizemore RV Museum.
Yes, and all of our listeners should love this because you all are RVers, and if you're not, you should be.
So We visited this back in 2000. What did we decide? 19 or 18?
It was 18.
18.
19? I don't know. Maybe
so
19.
One of the most famous things that they have in their collection is the RV from the movie RV. From what was that family's name?
It was the Gornicky family.
The Gornicky family. The annoying family that just kept trying to track down Robin Williams and his family.
Awesome.
That RV is there.
It's in their museum.
Right, right. And so it's pretty cool. Plus, they have a lot of other RVs dating back into the 20s and 30s, I think,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so they actually, so again, what's cool about this place, it's F-R-E-E, free. So it is free. And the Sizemore family that runs this museum, so they used to have an RV dealership. The RV dealership is no longer there, but they still run and operate the Jack Sizemore RV Museum. And we actually met with Jack's son, Trent. And Trent just, you know, said that they just wanted to give back to the community, that it, when they created this RV museum, that it was really all about giving back. And because of that, they said they've gotten back so much more.
Oh, we got to tell the full story there. First of all, Trent was an amazing guy. This is a guy that you want to know. Yeah. You want to be a part of his life because he's just such a special person. And I mean that from my heart. What a great guy. But he said that the way it started was started getting these just crazy old RVs
in trade.
And they would put them in this warehouse, and it would just kind of, you know, wasn't organized or anything. It was just all parked in this warehouse. And so people would come in to get their RV serviced, and they were like, you know what? Go out there. Here's the keys. Go out there and check out the warehouse, some of these old things. And so more and more people came by just to start seeing the museum.
Uh-huh.
And so that's kind of where it was born. And now it's two different warehouses they've got.
Yeah, two different warehouses. And what's cool about the story, too, is he said, you know, again, they had the RV dealership. And they never realized how much of an impact this museum had on people and the dealership. People would come in that weren't RVers that had heard about the museum, would go through the museum, come back out front and go, I want to be a part of this community. I'm ready to buy an RV. And he said it ended up generating more business than they could ever imagine. And they just kept adding more and more to their collection. It just kept growing. And again, giving back to the community and doing it all for free. So it was just incredible.
Yeah, he said he just kept giving and giving and giving. And more would keep coming back and back and back to him. And once again, Trent was such a special person.
Oh,
you could tell. We haven't met Jack Sizemore's dad, but you can tell that he was raised right, basically.
Yeah, so some of the cool pieces in there, like we talked about, there's that 1948 flexible RV that was used in the movie RV by the Gornicky family. They have currently the world's oldest Airstream, a 1935 torpedo, which was incredible. They also have the first ever Itasca motorhome to ever be built in 1975. And you have to go through this place. I mean, you will see things in RVs that will make your mind be blown. I mean, we're talking like big radios, not like the little radios. We're talking like the big radios you saw in your like grandparents' home or great-grandparents' home, the big wooden ones. They had wood-burning stoves in these things. I mean, it was just incredible what they did.
And they also had older motorcycles and cars. I think they had a relationship with the
a
racing museum or something like that.
Yeah.
I'm not doing this justice. I can't recall. But anyway, that's kind of mixed in there with the museum. So, you know, if you're into that kind of thing, you're into older motorcycles, you're into old racing. And I can't even think of the name of those cars that they were racing.
Yeah, I can't. They weren't sprint cars.
I have no idea.
Don't know.
But anyway, it's there. If you're into that thing, you can see that. So let's move on.
Yes.
Number three is going to be really short because we talked about it in great detail in episode three, and that's visit Paladura Canyon. You know, you're 20, 30 minutes away from Paladura Canyon, the second largest canyon in America.
Mm-hmm.
That's right?
Yes, in the United States, yep.
Lots of hiking, lots of biking. Go get the burger at the bottom, as we talked about. It's going to be the best egg on burger, especially if you've hiked more than 10 miles. but anyway, so we'll leave it at that. I'm trying to hurry up here because I see the time clicking away. The number two, we got to spend some time here because we had such
so
a great
amazing.
Number two is visit the American Quarter Horse Hall of Fame and Museum. Now this is right off of I-40. You can see it from the freeway. You know, Cal grew up around horses. I'm from Kentucky. You know, Kentucky's a big horse state, but I know nothing about horses. I mean, absolutely nothing. I'm embarrassed to say that. You know, any listeners out there from Kentucky would be like, oh my gosh, you're not representing, buddy.
He does know bourbon though, so that's okay.
I do know bourbon. Now we just look like alcoholics, but but anyway, so Nikki and
Chris.
Chris.
Sorry, Chris.
Okay, I was going to say Chris. gave us a private tour. This was on their day off.
Yes.
They're closed on Mondays, right?
Yep. They were closed on Monday. They opened, let us in and gave us a private tour. And it was...
I was blown away.
Yeah. It was such an awe-inspiring experience. You know, me growing up, I grew up riding quarter horses and then moved over into the thoroughbred world. So to go into the Quarter Horse Hall of Fame and Museum was just mind blowing.
Yeah. So if you're, if you're a football fan, just imagine walking into the Hall of Fame of the
footballers.
Is that in Canton, Ohio? Is that right?
I think it is.
Or is that the baseball?
I think
it's football. I'm pretty sure Canton football. I don't know.
Yeah.
Please give me some room here because I don't know. I don't watch much football. I know I turned in my man card and got married. but anyway, when you walked in here, I mean, there was this kind of reverence about the quarter horse.
Mm-hmm.
And it was amazing. Like on the floor, they had the whole lineage of where the quarter horse started in every family that's connected to, or every horse that's ever been bred.
The bloodline. So there are ways that you can, you know, you can reach out to the American Quarter Horse Congress, American Quarter Horse, the group there. Sorry, I'm losing my words here. And they can help you find your horse's lineage. And most all quarter horses and most all of that lineage can be tied back to these main horses that are listed here on their floor. It's just incredible. It was so incredible to see. And that was in their Hall of Fame. And then inside of their Hall of Fame, there are 328 inducted Hall of Famers. And these are both horses and people, which I thought was incredible. And inductees are anybody who has made a significant impact on the breed. So whether it was, you know, the horse itself that made a significant impact because of just their kind of qualities and how they were bred and, you know, the offspring that they created or how they contributed into the world, whether they were a champion and, you know, roping or reining or even racing. But then people as well that can get inducted in to this Hall of Fame. So all of them are listed there in the hall, the grand hall. And it was just like, you just kind of went in like, wow.
And you don't have to be a rancher, a horse rancher, or someone that loves horses, because I went in knowing nothing about horses. And I got to say, Chris was so patient. I asked so many questions. And she kept saying, that's a good question. I'm like, I know it's not. I know it's not a good question. But she was so patient. She answered everything. But, you know, at the end, she actually said, or towards the end, she said, you know what? This is good because we want to attract people that don't know about horses.
Right.
And so she said she really appreciated a lot of my questions because, you know, I asked them because I'm dumb and not afraid to ask questions. dumb when it comes to horses because I had no idea. But, you know what? We toured the first floor, and I was like, oh, this is really cool. I thought we were done.
Yeah.
And then she's like, well, we got to go upstairs. And I was like, there's more upstairs? You know, this is quite a bit downstairs. So we went upstairs, and that's where the Hall of Fame is. And it was just mind-blowing.
It was mind-blowing. So it was artifacts and pieces and stories and pictures of the inductees of the Hall of Famers. And, you know, dating back, I don't even remember the earliest date, but, you know, dating back 30 years ago, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, 100 years ago, whatever it may be. And it was just incredible to see these people and these horses and their stories and how they contributed to the quarter horse world. It was awe-inspiring. It truly, truly was.
Yeah. So do your, when you go in, check in, there's a nominal fee. I can't remember how much it is, but pay that and then go in and watch the movie first.
Yes,
it's a little video. Go watch the video first. I guess there's different ways that you can start, but watch the movie first. And then I think you're really going to really enjoy it. It's really a good time.
And they also have a museum there as well. So, you know, we talk about the Hall of Fame, but they also have beautiful paintings that they have curated of the quarter horse and famous painters of quarter horses.
That's right. What was his name?
Oh, Lordy, you're going to ask me. I know I wrote it down here somewhere.
He made those amazing frames.
Was it Mel Lawson?
Olson, wasn't it?
Mel Lawson. Well, he's a bronze artist. No, it was somebody else.
Okay,
Oh, here it is.
There it is.
Orin Mixer.
Yeah, Orin Mixer made all these frames in here and painted all these pictures, and they're amazing. They're stunning.
Oh,
so gorgeous. So check out, especially in the video room where you watch the video. Go around and check out the frames that he made. He handmade all those frames and painted all the pictures. So, but anyway, moving on. We got to get to number one.
Yes, we have to get to number one.
The number one. Give us the drum roll, Callie.
Ready?
The number one thing to do in Amarillo, Texas, you see it from the side of the road from I-40. It says the Big Texan, go eat at the Big Texan restaurant.
Yes. And the Big Texan restaurant is so much more than just a restaurant. This is the home of the 72-ounce steak challenge. And I personally now know someone who has attempted the 72-ounce steak challenge.
Oh, that was
a
bad
mistake.
And
he's sitting right across from me. Babe, tell him about it.
Ooh. So I fasted all day, and so I hadn't ate for 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
I was starving, honestly. I was hungry. And the steak came out. I'm like, oh, that's a big steak. 72 ounces of steak. That's
it's 4.5 pounds.
Four and a half pounds.
That's like a small chihuahua.
But you've got to eat the steak. You've got to eat the potato.
Uh-huh.
You've got to eat a roll. You've got to eat the salad.
And the shrimp.
Yeah, there's three shrimp appetizers that are deep fried shrimp, basically. And I was starving. So I started off like, oh, gosh, this tastes great. This is going
to
be easy.
An hour to do it.
So I did pretty well. I wasn't eating fast enough, apparently. So at one point, you know, about halfway through the steak, I cut it up. I threw the salad on it. I threw a dressing on it. And I'm like, I'm going to have a steak salad. So I ate that, and I was done with that. But after a while, the steak starts getting cold, and it started getting a little gritty. And I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to go to the potato. I was trying to save the potato for last, because once you eat carbs, you know, you start filling
like,
up.
Oof.
Right. I'd save the potato and the bread for last. But I just couldn't eat another bite of the steak. And so I started eating the potato. I finished that. I finished the appetizer, the salad, the shrimp, what else am I missing?
Salad, potato, shrimp, and roll.
Roll, yeah. So I finished all that. And I went back to the steak, and I ate like four or five more bites. And I was like, okay, I'm done. and it wasn't really that I was full. First of all, I had what?
I think
18 minutes, 17
yeah,
minutes
left?
Yeah,
you had 13. You had 13 minutes left.
Yeah, and so I'm like, I'm done. And it wasn't, again, I wasn't full because I ate so fast it hadn't hit my belly yet. But the steak was getting cold. I'm like, this is getting gross. They asked if I wanted to reheat it, but I had cut it up in small pieces. I'm like, no, don't worry about it. I'm like, I think I'm tapping out. And so I tapped out, but we went back to the RV and weighed it. And I had 17 ounces left. So I did a pretty good number on the steak. And then about, I don't know, about 10 minutes after we got back to the RV,
he was gone.
All the food hit my belly. Now, here's how bad it was. So I left the steak. And I'm like, I'm not even really that full. So I stopped and got some gelato on the way out. So I had like three scoops of ice cream after eating 50-something ounces of steak. And,
oh, my gosh.
And anyway, so I get back to the hotel, we wait, and just like, bam, it hit me. And I just like, I passed out for like two hours.
Oh, he did. He was gone. It was so funny. But the 72-ounce steak challenge is super cool to watch and see. If you don't want to do the steak challenge, obviously
the
you don't have
good.
To. The food is very, very good.
The rolls
good.
Were incredible.
The rolls are to die for.
Callie doesn't eat carbs because they
carbs
do weird
things.
Carbs
and I don't get along.
When I got done, I'm like, those rolls were good. And she's like, yeah, I ate four. I'm like, you ate four rolls? Callie never eats four rolls. She's 122 pounds. She doesn't eat four rolls ever, and she ate four rolls.
I ate four. They were so good. But this place is so much more than just the restaurant. So definitely go. The steaks are really, really good. You're at a steakhouse. You got to get a steak. Sorry. Don't get fish. Don't get chicken. Get the steak.
Yeah, absolutely.
But they have also a brewery there. That's hard to say. They have a hotel there. They have a massive gift shop. Like, anything and everything you could possibly imagine in this gift shop. They have, make sure you go all the way to the back because they do have their resident, I think it's a rattlesnake in the very, very back, which is kind of cool to say hi to him.
And they got a campground.
And they have a campground, which is where we stay. So it's the Big Texan RV Ranch is where we stay. And it's maybe a mile down the street from the Big Texan Steakhouse.
Right off the exit. There's some benefits because the people that own the campground obviously own the restaurant. Mm-hmm. So you can get food delivered to you. You can. Yes. They've got limousines that they'll take you down to
they'll
the restaurant.
You to the restaurant and back.
So yeah, moving on to campground options. That's the one we like. And again, we're not being sponsored by them. We're just telling you from our heart. It's a nice park. It's okay, but it's right off the interstate.
It's so convenient.
And again, a lot of people that pull off here just spend the night to move on to some other place, whether they're going west or whether they're going east.
They'll literally stop, go to the Big Texan Steakhouse for dinner, pack up in the morning and drive out.
Right.
And we've done that ourselves. I mean, the past two times we went through Amarillo, that's exactly what we did.
Yep, that's right. So that was it. And then we saw that there was a new RV park put into near Cadillac Ranch called the Cadillac Ranch RV Park,
yes,
I think, right?
It is the Cadillac RV Park and Cadillac Ranch gift store is there. And that's where they have the Second Amendment cowboy. You can't miss him. He's huge. He has a yellow shirt. He's got his hat. He's a Second Amendment cowboy. And there's some Cadillacs that sit out front of that RV park, which looks super, super nice. There's also Fort Amarillo RV Park, which is located not too far off of Interstate 40. And this is on the west side.
You could also stay in Palo Duro Canyon
if you wanted to, and drive up.
Get
in there, absolutely.
Yeah, so you can stay in the canyon or at the rim, and we talk about this in episode 3, so I'm not going to talk a lot about it, but you could do the Palo Duro Canyon Rim RV Park. So again, that's 20, 30 minutes away. I would recommend, staying right there in Amarillo if you're actually going to stay there in Amarillo.
Right, it's right off of 40. There is a KOA, but that is a little bit northeast of town, but not too terribly far. Amarillo is actually a pretty compact city. We were surprised at how quickly we were able to get around and get to places, usually about 10, 15 minutes from the RV park.
But
we were able to get there.
As far as getting around, I didn't see any public transportation. You can't really walk. So everything's pretty spread out, even though it is compact. So you're going to have to take your car everywhere you go pretty much. I think Uber's there. You can Uber if you want as well. But everything's kind of along the I-40.
Corridor. So you get outside of that, you're really going to hit kind of residential areas, residential neighborhoods. We did find some great shopping on the west side of town. It's all stores that you would know, but very nice build-up kind of area out on the west side of the city.
So that is Amarillo, Texas. Everything you want to do, and again, it's a great little place. If you're passing through, want to stop a couple extra day, do a couple things that we've spoken about.
Yes.
Also, you can get the top 10 download again, absolutely free of what to do in Amarillo that we're talking about, and that is at www.rvdestinationsmagazine.com/top 10, or you can, there should be a link down in the notes section. You can just link over that way, put your email in, and we will email you the PDF. So that's all absolutely free.
Free.
And again,
free.
If you're looking for any more destination content, we invite you to subscribe to RV Destinations Magazine. We're excited about rolling out our print edition of RV Destinations Magazine real soon. So if you're one of those people, we've been digital for 3 or 4 years in 3 years, I guess, and we're rolling out our first print edition based off of subscriber feedback.
Yes.
So we're kind of going backwards, I think, but we're going to roll that
backwards,
out for you.
Yep, moving forwards.
Exactly.
Forward,
but
forwards.
Anyway, we'd like to thank everybody for joining us.
Thank you.
We appreciate you spending your time. Remember to rate, review, subscribe, follow us on podcast, Spotify, iHeartRadio. We're on Google. We're on Apple.
Wherever
you get your podcast,
you're going to find us.
Click that follow, and you'll get those downloads. Every Wednesday, we put out a new destination for you to take your family to. So this is Randy Beheimer and Callie Beheimer saying so long. Happy travels to you. Happy and safe travels to you.
Yes.
Till next time.
Happy trails to you.
You've been listening to the RV Destinations Podcast. Hitting the road in an RV is one of the most popular things to do nowadays. And it's our passion to clue you in on where to go and what to see. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Make sure to like, rate, and review. And we'll be back soon. But in the meantime, visit our website at www.rvdestinationsmagazine.com. And from there, you'll get a more in-depth look at destinations for the RVer. Thanks for listening. Be safe out there. And we'll see you next time on the RV Destinations Podcast.